Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
A lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's all of the above.
That's not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle.
Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it.
Hello everyone, welcome to this episode called Scoping It Out, A Close Look at Laparoscopy.
Yeah, so we thought this would be really important because loads of people have diagnostic laparoscopies. We know that there's lots and lots of kind of publicity around endometriosis at the moment. And a lot of people undergo a laparoscopy as part of their diagnosis for endometriosis. And we do laparoscopies for lots of other different reasons as well. So if you've been found to have an ovarian cyst, so a cyst on your ovary, or if you've been found to have adhesions, so that kind of
like scar tissue
stuck to sticky bits,
Or an ectopic pregnancy, need to have a laparoscopy to have it treated.
Yeah, there's lots of different reasons as part of kind of fertility treatment if you're not getting pregnant. And sometimes we do a laparoscopy to check that your tubes are working. So we do laparoscopies for lots of different reasons. So we thought it'd be quite interested to give like a closer look as to what a laparoscopy is.
Yeah.
I think it's like a big word that people are like, having a laparoscopy, not really sure what it is.
Camera in your tummy tends to be a nice, easy way of understanding what it is.
People also call it keyhole. Well, is that right? Because that's what I'm
surgery.
Like.
Yeah. My tongue. So it's not like open abdominal surgery.
Through. They're a little keyhole.
So I guess we'll go into what it is, because that all feeds in quite nicely. So a laparoscopy is a look inside your tummy.
Yeah.
So you have a cut on your belly button, and then that is where the camera goes. So we put the camera inside there.
It's a small cut. It's like 10 millimetres, so 1 centimetre.
1 centimetre.
So it's crazy that you do a whole surgery through, like...
Well, you do more as well.
Yeah, but, like, still such a small hole.
The other cuts are even smaller.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So once you've put that port in, that's the first one, you blow the tummy up with gas, and then that helps to prevent you causing any injuries. And then you would put in your camera, and then you would put in some more ports. So these are the smaller ones, like 0.5 centimetre. The number that you have depends on what is going to be done. And you might not know that until you're actually inside and have had a look with the camera. But then, yes, you have, you know, sometimes 1, 2, sometimes 4, 5 little ports that you put instruments through, and that's how you operate. So that's keyhole surgery. Yeah,
and then you can see everything on a screen in front of you, either in 2D or in 3D. So we operate in 3D sometimes with little 3D glasses.
I was going to ask, like at the cinema?
Literally, with little glasses on. And you're able to get a really good view of what's going on. You are, if you're having the operation, you're on a head-down tilt. Because if you've got to imagine if you're...
Head down, okay.
Yeah, so if you're laying flat or your bowels are just sat in where we want to be looking as gynecologists. But if we put you head down, a lot of your bowels will just kind of go up towards the top of your tummy, and we can see exactly what we need to do.
Gravity. And you are under general anaesthetic for this.
Definitely.
Absolutely. There is no alternative. You must be asleep. That's generally what it is.
Yep.
Obviously, we'll go into a little bit more of like the different things that we might find and what we might do with the things that we find. So I guess, why would you have one? What would be the reasons to have a laparoscopy? We touched on it a little bit before.
Yep.
One of the main things in gynecology is a diagnostic laparoscopy. So it is surgery, but it's a diagnostic surgery.
Yeah.
So it's really important to consider that, because it's, you know, surgery has risks associated with it. And if there's a better way to potentially diagnose something, or maybe even treat things without needing to have a surgical diagnosis, then that's better generally. If you need one, then it might be to diagnose something like the cause of your pelvic pain, which one of those things can be endometriosis, or it can be scar tissue, or it can be your bowels. So you might not know what you are going to find until you're inside. And then the other thing we often do as well is If we're suspecting something like endometriosis or like a big ovarian cyst, because we might have seen something on the scan, mm-hmm. we would also add to the diagnostic laparoscopy plus minus. So we will or will not do treatment to the endometriosis if it's
Depending on
what you find. Yeah.
So sometimes we would remove a fallopian tube if the fallopian tube looked abnormal or was filled with fluid. Sometimes we would remove a cyst if there's an ovarian cyst. Sometimes we would do some adhesiolysis, so taking down of these adhesions.
Mm-hmm.
So if the if your ovary is stuck to the sidewall or the back of the womb or anything, then we can take these adhesions down.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's a plus or minus, as you said, there is quite a lot of we're not sure a lot of the time what we're going to do before we go in. Mm-hmm. If somebody has a naive tummy, like we've not been in their tummy before, sometimes it would be a completely planned operation. So if you've had a diagnostic laparoscopy previously and we've seen X, Y, and Z, and then we've had a discussion with you about what to do, and we've decided that we are going to do whatever, then you would know kind of what we're going to do. But a lot of the times it's
going
like
with a plan
with a diagnostic laparoscopy, it'll be a sort of, we'll think through what we might do, but we won't know exactly what we're going to do until we're inside.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have a chat beforehand about what you would like us to do, depending on what we find.
That's fair. That makes sense.
It's always like a two-way thing, isn't it?
So other reasons, to potentially look for your cause of pain, to treat something like a swollen tube or a cyst, to remove an ectopic pregnancy, which we've discussed in a previous episode, so we won't need to go into too much detail there, to look if your tubes are patent, so... a camera in your tummy so you can see the tubes, you can see the fimbriel ends, the ends that waft the eggs in. And then you put some blue dye through the womb, which goes through into the tubes and spills out into the tummy. So if you can see blue dye coming out of the tubes, then you know that they're open or patent.
Mm-hmm. I thought patent's like shiny shoes. I was like, what?
So basically seeing the things as well that you can't see on a hysteroscopy.
Different things to a hysteroscopy. Also, we do check everything in the abdomen. So everything that we can see in that cavity space. So we can check up by your liver and your gallbladder, because sometimes if people have had a pelvic infection, you would be able to see that they've got symptoms of that up by their liver. And you can kind of have a look at the bowels, make sure there's nothing kind of else going on. So we always do what we call a 360-degree sweep.
All the way around,
little sweep, to make sure there's nothing else going on. And then we concentrate kind of in the pelvis to see what we need to do.
Hmm. So what happens when you come for a diagnostic laparoscopy?
Start
to finish. So it generally is a day case procedure, which means that generally you will come in on the day and go home on the same day. So you'll come in at a certain time. You will have been asked to not eat or drink from a certain time a few hours before.
Yeah.
You'll be checked in by the team. They will do things like check your blood pressure, run through the plan for the day, check that your consent form has been signed and that you are aware of what you're having, see if anything's changed.
Your pregnancy test.
You'll see the surgeon that will be doing your operation before the operation, so that you can be 100% sure of what's going to happen, ask any questions that you have.
And at that time, we might discuss things like extras. So, as an add-on. But sometimes when people are having a procedure like this, we'll discuss the Myrina coil, for example. So the Myrina coil is the progesterone-releasing coil that sits in your womb, releases a small amount of progesterone, thins out the line of the womb. We've done an episode on it before. Some people that are kind of worried about having it put in being awake, we can pop that in when you are asleep. So that's kind of a good time to talk about exactly what we're going to do, and if it's something that you would like to consider for a contraception or for treatment of pelvic pain or for treatment of heavy periods. So we can discuss that at the time as well.
So you'll also see the anaesthetist, who's the person that will be putting you to sleep.
Yep.
And then once you come through to theatre, the anaesthetist will be the first person that will talk to you and will usually put a cannula in your arm and to give you the drugs that will make you go very sleepy and not feel what's going on for the rest of the time. Once you're asleep, then the surgical team will usually clean you. So we'll clean your tummy. We also clean your vulva. And then we'll put some nice blue sticky drapes on you so that we are only seeing the bits that we need to see.
Yeah.
I think people think when they're having a diagnostic laparoscopy because it's on their tummy, they forget that we will be going from down below as well.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's routine. So we empty your bladder, first of all, so you have a catheter, because when we're putting that port in your tummy, we want to make sure that you've not got a full bladder that we're going to kind of put a needle into, basically.
And usually, because it's a short procedure, that is a catheter that's just a little tube that goes in, empties your bladder, and then comes out.
Yeah, so you won't wake up
with a catheter in, unless the procedure's been really, really long. Yeah. Or, you know, something else. Then we also use a little instrument. So to be able to fully look at your pelvis, mm-hmm. we need to be able to move your womb.
We've said before on that basic anatomy episode that the womb is really very movable. Yeah. It's not stuck to anything.
Yeah.
It only has a few kind of anchor points in a sense.
Yeah.
So in order for us to see behind the womb and in front of the womb properly, we need to be able to manipulate that.
Yeah.
So we've got this little
device that is like a metal straw that just sits in the neck of your womb.
Yeah.
And then it means that we can move your womb forward and backwards, side to side, so that we can have a proper look. Because one of the reasons that you might be having a laparoscopy is to look for endometriosis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we need to have a look at where it might be. And sometimes it's tucked right behind your womb or in front of your womb.
Yeah.
So a lot of people might not be expecting to have a vaginal exam or to have anything put into their vagina because we're going through your tummy.
Yeah.
But actually that's a part of the procedure that we need to do to do it safely.
And is that the Spachman?
It's called a Spachman. That's what we use.
Yeah, we were discussing it the other day.
Also, if you were going to have the dye test, so if that's what you're having, that's how we put the dye through. So it goes through this little metal instrument that goes into your womb, and inevitably, some of that blue dye will go onto your oval.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to get that off. So you might wake up with blue and be like, oh.
Yeah. I feel like that's definitely something that people need to know before, because they'll be like, why am I turning blue?
Yeah. What have they done to me?
It's okay if you've had a lucky
dye. Yeah.
And then we would use a needle called a varus needle, make an incision in your tummy button, pop the needle into your tummy, and then, as Alison said before, pop lots of gas into the tummy so that we can see what we're going to want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Then you put the port with the camera in so you can have a look round, and then the other ports are usually much smaller, but you watch yourself putting them in with the camera inside the tummy so you can see,
to make sure that
you're kind of looking to where the blood vessels are, looking that you're kind of out of the way of any structures, that you're not going straight into anything that you don't want to damage, basically. Yeah.
So these little tools that you're putting in through the sides,
could
these be like little scissors?
Yeah.
Is there anything else?
Graspers, things with electricity on so that you can burn if you need to burn.
Wow. Yeah.
So everything can go through these tiny ports and we can see everything on a screen. You can take pictures, you can record it so that everybody can kind of make sure that you've done exactly what you said you've done.
Yeah.
I think it's quite useful actually, because then you can feedback to patients whatever you've seen, whether it's endometriosis, no endometriosis, an ovarian cyst, and what it looked like, so that you can kind of say, this is what it looked like before, this is what it looked like after, this is what we've removed. Yeah.
I'm just going to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
So when you first come, obviously you'll speak to the doctor and they'll take you through to the room that you're going to have your surgery in. Who else is going to be in that room with you as well?
Oh yeah, it's a good question.
Quite a lot of people actually. And I do think that this is, especially now, since COVID, we as in the team, the patient will come into theatre and be anaesthetised in theatre. Not in our hospital. I'm sure it's different in different hospitals, but in our hospital, they're anaesthetised in the theatre room, which I do get can be a little bit daunting. And everybody's very friendly and very nice, but there's going to be at least one anaesthetist, sometimes two.
Yeah.
There's going to be an ODP, which is the person that kind of assists the anaesthetist and generally always knows everything that's going on in theatre.
They're always very, very
knowledgeable.
Yeah, very knowledgeable.
Operation department practitioner.
But they know everything.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be two or three scrub nurses. So there'll be a scrub nurse who is actually scrubbed and set the instruments up.
So scrub means that they're sterile.
Yeah.
They've washed and they've got sterile gloves and sterile gowns so they can touch instruments that will go inside your tummy and not cause any risk of infection.
Yeah. And then there's usually like a runner, so a healthcare assistant as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's going to
be... And
you're there.
Usually two or three, depending on what's... Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of people there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're all there while we make sure you're the right person and that we're doing the right procedure as well.
Yeah, we do lots
There's
of
lot checks.
Yeah, you'll be asked your name like 10 times. Yeah.
So at least you walk into the room and after the procedure, you won't walk back out of the room. They would take you somewhere to recover.
So after the procedure, you are moved. Well, you kind of waking up, so you might have some awareness, but most people probably wouldn't, into a recovery room where there's another set of team nurses who will look after you while you are kind of coming out of the anaesthetic. So it's usually in that room that you start to become a bit more like aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
And it might be in that room, or it might be back onto the sort of like post-operative ward where one of the team members will explain what happened in your procedure.
It's not always the surgeon, which like, as a surgeon, it would be great if we could go and see everybody and tell them what's happened with the operation. But you've got to remember that we're doing like either a full morning or a full afternoon or a full day operating. So you've got the next patient, next patient, next patient. And sometimes you do get a chance to like nip out and the person's awake and you can tell them. But inevitably, there's always a lot of the things where you nip out, they're still asleep. And then you're operating and then you go out again and they've gone home.
They go home.
And
it's like, So someone would be able to tell you from your notes. So we'll write the notes. We always write the notes straight afterwards before we do the next procedure. So the nurses who are discharging you will be able to see from the notes what was done and will be able to tell you. But, you know, if you really wanted to stay to speak to the surgeon, that would be fine.
Yeah.
It's just often if you go home really quickly, because it is a day case and some people do want to get home, you might not have a chance to speak to the person who did the procedure for you.
And a lot of times they'll be telling you the same thing that someone else would have told you.
Yeah.
And then follow-up from that is depending on what is found and depending on what the outcome needs to be, that's going to be individualised. And individualised to patient, hospital and findings.
Yeah.
So the follow-up will just be completely different depending on what it is.
I have a question.
Okay.
So if we go back to where you said you can have the conversation about potential treatments and what can be done during the diagnostic laparoscopy. So if endometriosis has been found and one of the lines of treatment that you've agreed to is to get a coil, they'll put that in while you're in the procedure. Yep. Would they put that in through your vagina, through your womb?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Put it in the exact same way as if you were in a clinic and awake having it done.
Yep.
The benefit is that you are asleep, so you don't feel it.
And would they take the metal rod out before they do that?
Yeah.
I think my confusion with this is where laparoscopy and hysteroscopy, they all sound quite similar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, we're actually
they're looking in
so in this we're in the tummy.
Places.
Yeah, we're in the tummy.
Yeah, okay. So it all goes back to Latin. So like the oscopy, the scope bit is kind of looking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the bit before that is telling you where you're looking. So hystery usually refers to a uterus.
Okay.
So you know you're looking in and the uterus. And lap will be
abdomen.
You're not so some people would have a hysteroscopy and a laparoscopy during the same procedure. But in a hysteroscopy, you will never see what you're supposed to see in a laparoscopy. In a laparoscopy, you will never see what you're seeing in a hysteroscopy.
A you're either in the womb or out of the womb.
Or both.
And at the same time.
If you're seeing the other thing, then it means that you've perforated one way or another.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
which is not
ideal.
But yeah, I guess that brings us on to the risks, because it's really important to be aware, and you would be if you were being, consented for one of these procedures.
As we always say.
It's a low risk, but a no risk.
She's
got to
get it
in.
And it's really easy to kind of split them into serious but less common risks, and then, less serious but more common risks.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to the serious risks, these are things that, will not happen very often, but if they did happen, it would have an impact on you. So that would be a risk of serious complications overall is about 2 in 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
So serious complications include things like bowel injury, injury to your bladder or the tubes connecting your bladder to your kidneys, injury to your blood vessels, which might be small, could be major blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
And then also noting about if we caused any injury to your bowels, we might not always know straight away.
Okay.
So in about 15% of people, we won't recognise that there's an injury. You might wake up, feel unwell, come back to hospital and then have another surgery. So they're the more serious things.
Mm-hmm.
You can also bleed, so you can hemorrhage. Mm-hmm. You might need a blood transfusion, so someone should chat to you about whether you accept them or not beforehand. An infection as well, so you may get antibiotics depending on what procedure is done.
Yeah, I think there are certain procedures that we'll definitely give antibiotics for, and they're a no-brainer. So if we're putting dye through tubes, you would always get antibiotics because you're flushing kind of fluid into the abdomen.
And if you had an infection somewhere, it could flush it. Be an infection.
You can't sterilise a womb.
No. So there are things for that. But I was just thinking, when people are like, oh, I'm coming for a laparoscopy, I know lots of people have had it,
these serious risks do happen.
They do.
Yeah.
I've seen someone have a major vessel injury, and that's kind of a, it's a, you will then have a laparotomy from your sternum
top to bottom,
your pubic bone, because we need to see what's going on, get some pressure on whatever is bleeding and get somebody in to repair it. This is, you know, yes, they are low risk procedures, but when things go wrong, they can really go wrong.
Yeah. So it is also, therefore, with a diagnostic lap, we need to think about, is it necessary?
Yeah.
Like, you know, is it something that you really need and you really want and it's going to benefit you? Mm-hmm. Because there is a risk of these serious complications. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Low risk, but not no risk.
Yeah.
And also, there is a risk of death with any procedure. So it's like 3 to 7 in 100,000. It's not likely to happen, but that could be as a result of complications that have happened. And is it, are we definitely doing the right procedure for you before we do it?
Yeah. I think with the, sorry, Eleanor, just for the, like, the risk of death and the risk of complications, these risks go up massively in certain situations.
Yeah.
So if somebody has had lots of surgery before, their complication risk is going to be much higher than somebody that's not had any surgery on their tummy.
And that's because if you imagine you've had surgery before, you've got scar tissue inside your tummy, so things are in different places and potentially more
complicated.
Well, the bowel could be completely stuck to where you're going to just put a needle through.
Yeah.
So with the best will in the world and the safest methods, you're still going to end up with a bowel injury your bowel is stuck up and behind
the other thing is if you've got a higher body weight, so generally higher BMI is more likely to have complications, and it's a more complicated surgery then because it is much harder as well. So those risks that we mentioned go up if you've had previous surgery, if you have a very high, well, a high BMI or high body weight.
I had a question.
The other risks, the more common but less serious things, which are also important to consider, are that you will have some discomfort, pain afterwards. You will probably have some bruising. You'll have some scars, obviously. Some people can get hernias, so little kind of like protrusions where the scars are, like in your belly button. Sometimes that can happen months later. And we try and avoid that by making sure everything's closed, but it can happen. And infection as well. You can have a risk of infection afterwards.
So obviously we've touched on that diagnostic laparoscopies aren't suitable for absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
In a situation where someone has chronic pelvic pain and the first line of treatment that we've gone for is, do you think that you'd be happy to have a coil? Do we think that a Mirena coil would help? And they say yes and try the coil and all their symptoms have gone and they don't have pain. Would it then be necessary to still do a diagnostic laparoscopy, or would it not be suitable for them? Or
I don't think it would be necessary. We would get the same answer either way. So I think if you can have treatment and it helps whatever symptom you have, then stick with the treatment. I think if you've got treatment, if you've got symptoms that are resistant and to different treatments that you've tried and you've persevered with a couple of different treatments, then I think it's reasonable to have a diagnostic laparoscopy in that situation. There are some people that it's not really a diagnostic but kind of a treatment laparoscopy. So if people have got, for example, endometriosis and a large endometrioma, so a big cyst
on the ovary,
then that would need treatment because it's not going to go away on its own when they get large.
Yeah, if it's a really big one, it's been there for a while, then you may not have had a laparoscopy before, so it's still technically a, like, diagnostic laparoscopy, but you're more likely to, you know, have that cyst removed.
You know,
but if we've reassured you and you've had an ultrasound scan and it's normal, you've had a Mirena fitted, or you've gone on the progesterone-only pill, or you've got an implant in and you're feeling much better, then there is no reason for you to have a diagnostic laparoscopy.
I think it's definitely about, like, making patient's life as easy and as good as it can be,
and also not causing harm. Like, we have to not, you know, we have to be really, really conscious about not causing harm unnecessarily. Obviously, having a procedure can be classed as harm because you're in pain and it's a surgery.
You're cutting into someone.
But what are you doing it for the right reasons? Is it going to be worth it for the patient?
Speaking of being in pain, what is the aftercare like? Will you feel in pain afterwards? Or
I feel like everybody is really very variable. Some people feel quite well and are up and about very quickly. Other people have a couple of weeks off work and then need more time off work. It depends what you've had done as well. If you've had a diagnostic laparoscopy, it's usually quite straightforward, and the procedure
procedure can be done in maybe 20 minutes or so.
Wow, that's really quick.
But if you're having anything removed or any further procedures, then it can be quite uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult sometimes for people to get their head around it, because you'll have maybe like a 10 millimetre and 2 5-millimetre ports, but yet your tummy's really hurting. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, because you can't see what we've done inside.
Yeah, it's not just the little surface.
Not just the little ports. Yeah. So it's like the pushing, the pulling, the moving. People say that feels like they've been kicked in the stomach. Oh, we don't kick anybody in the stomach. But it does.
You promise.
Kind of feel like you've been kicked.
Do
in
you
the
encourage
stomach.
People to take painkillers?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah.
And so mobilising helps.
Up and about.
We fill your rid of tummy with gas, and although we take most of it out, there's always some left.
You said people feel quite bloated.
Yeah, and you can get sort of that wind. Shoulder tip pain, that like referred pain up to your shoulder because the gas is irritating your diaphragm. So that kind of, you know, peppermint tea can help, peppermint water, moving around to try and dissipate that gas. Yeah.
So yeah.
The other thing that I think is really important to talk about and to think about if you're going to have a diagnostic laparoscopy for something like pain is that it may be normal. You may not see anything that might be causing your pain on that laparoscopy, and that can be really difficult if you're someone that's waited a long time, you've got chronic pain, you've tried some different hormone treatments, they've not helped, you think you've got endometriosis, you go for this laparoscopy and you're expecting it to be finally and know what's going on. Then you get told everything looked perfect. Yeah. Nothing was abnormal. Couldn't see any endo. Your ovaries are perfect. Your uterus looks great. Then it can be, although it's good news, you don't have endometriosis.
It can feel disheartening.
Yeah.
It can feel awful because you've been waiting for that final reason for your pain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's something that I think you should consider before you have a laparoscopy and be aware that
there is a chance.
We may find nothing.
Yeah.
And what would happen after that? You know?
Yeah, and I always have 40% of diagnostic laparoscopies that don't find.
Yeah,
If you've got a normal scan. So if we're not expecting anything, then there is a high chance that we won't find anything. I always have a really frank conversation with people and kind of say, what are you going to do with each outcome? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are you going to do if we've got endometriosis? What are you going to do if we find nothing? Mm-hmm. Because although we're kind of telling you it's great, like we've not found anything that we need to kind of potentially do anything about, it can, as you say, be really disheartening, because they're just, I feel like people feel like then they're listened to even less. Mm-hmm. So they've waited for so long, and then we're just telling them, oh, well, they've got nothing there. But we're not taking it away. You've clearly got pain.
Yeah.
But how are we going to deal with that? What other things could we do? Mm. What other treatments could we think about? Mm-hmm. Do we think about alternative treatments? And I think having an open dialogue helps
The involvement of other people as well. If you're feeling distressed about it, definitely speak to someone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And although it's great that endometriosis has got a lot more awareness and people are aware of what the symptoms can cause, it isn't the only cause of pelvic pain.
Yeah.
So it could be adenomyosis, completely different, which we'll talk about in a different topic, in a different episode. You can also have chronic pelvic pain, kind of a diagnosis of exclusion. Like, we don't know what the actual cause is, but you have these symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that if your laparoscopy is normal, we'll just be like, goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah.
It will still be a case of, like, we'll have to find the best place for you to get treatment, and that might be symptom relief rather than
so overlapping with so many different things. If it's chronic pelvic pain in general, there's lots of
it could be related to your bladder, it could be your bowel, it could be your pelvic floor, it could be the nerves, like it could be so many things other than endometriosis.
There's lots of different things.
Was that everything that we wanted to cover?
Yeah, I think we've covered everything about questions as well.
Oh my gosh, really?
Got them all in there.
Oh my gosh.
Got it all done.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for listening. Quick disclaimer, so these that we've shared are our opinions, they're not affiliated with where we work, and anything we've said shouldn't be taken as medical advice.
Please make sure you're following us wherever you listen to your podcasts and leave us a review.
And follow us on all of our socials at Between Two Ovaries on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram.
Everywhere.
We're making fun of us.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.